Okay. Well, first of all, let me thank the organizers for the opportunity to speak about our results here. The experiments that I'm going to describe today have been done in collaboration with Jan Jarošinski, who is also at the Magnet Lab. The system that we have been looking at is a 2D system of strongly interacting electrons that move in a random potential. And in the first part of the talk, I'm going to describe the system a little bit. This device that we have allows us to vary the electron density over a very wide range, so we can go easily from the insulating all the way to the metallic regime, and in particular through the region of the metal insulator transition. The metal insulator transition in two dimensions has been a subject of a lot of research and interest in recent years, and trying to understand this problem has also partly motivated our studies of the glassy dynamics of the dynamics of this system. In general, there are two ways to probe the dynamics. One of them is to measure the fluctuations of some quantity, because this is going to give you the information about correlations. And this is indeed what we did some years ago in this system. We measured the fluctuations of conductivity with time. And what we found is that at sufficiently low temperatures, there was a very well-defined carrier density below which the dynamics suddenly and significantly slowed down, and at the same time it became correlated in agreement consistent with the hierarchical picture of glassy dynamics. So this is not what I'm going to talk about today. Today I'm going to talk about the experiments that we did that employ the other standard way to probe the dynamics, which is to perturb the system out of equilibrium and measure the response. So as you will see, we have employed two different protocols, and we have been able to find all the main manifestations of glassiness in this system, which include non-exponential relaxations. We also find that the equilibration times for all densities below this same NG diverge in the zero temperature limit, signaling a glass transition at zero temperature. We also find evidence for aging and memory, and we have been able to make a connection to the 2D metal insulator transition. So the system that we are looking at is a 2D electron system in silicon MOSFETs, where MOSFET stands for the metal oxide semiconductor, in this case silicon field effect transistor. In this device, if you apply the voltage to the gate, you can induce this layer of electrons on the silicon side of the silicon-silicon dioxide interface. And it has been known for several decades that when you cool the system down to sufficiently low temperatures, the electrons are confined to a plane, so the system is effectively two-dimensional. It is also known that these electrons move in a smooth random potential, and the disorder is due primarily to the positively charged sodium ions that are randomly distributed throughout the silicon dioxide. So they're spatially separated from the 2D electrons, which are in silicon. And of course, the interface has very some roughness of the interface, which contributes to the disorder. The regime of densities that we are interested in is the regime of low densities, which here are typically of the order of 10 to 11 per centimeter squared. And it is, if we make a simple estimate of the Coulomb interaction energy to Fermi energy, which in 2D is proportional to the density, it is easy to find that this ratio of Coulomb energy to Fermi energy is of the order of 10. So Coulomb interactions appear to be strong in this regime, and they get stronger, relatively speaking, as the density decreases. It is this regime of densities that people have been studying in recent years, where they have found interesting evidence suggestive of the presence of a metal insulator transition in 2D. In that same range where the metal insulator transition appears to occur, the conductivity is of the order of E squared over H, so KFL is of the order of 1. So we see, based on just these simple things, that we have a system where Coulomb interactions are strong, and at the same time the disorder is also strong. So we have a competition of these two effects, and as Peter was explaining in his introduction earlier today, this competition leads to the frustration because the system cannot satisfy both of these requirements. And one expects that in this case, this will give rise to many metastable states in the associative glassy dynamics. Before I start describing our experiments, I need to explain briefly, just give you a brief summary of the description of the various transport regimes that are relevant that are known to exist in a 2D electron system in silicon MOSFETs. I do not have the time to show any data, so I have tried to summarize all the experimental results that you need to know for the that are important for the rest of the talk of this one slide. So this is a phase diagram of a 2D electron system in silicon MOSFETs in general case. On this axis, we have the carrier density. This is the temperature. And at high densities, when KFL is greater than 1, this is the regime where people see this strong metallic temperature dependence and all kinds of interesting effects. And there is still no general agreement whether this range of densities, the behavior can be described using Fermi liquid theory or not. However, this is not what we are interested in, so you can forget about this for the rest of this talk. The regime that we are interested in is when KFL is smaller than 1, and in fact, and this is where all the glass effects are observed. We do not observe any glassiness when KFL is greater than 1. Okay, so at the lowest densities, if you measure transport, you find that conductivity depends exponentially on temperature. So as temperature goes to 0, conductivity goes to 0, which means that your ground state is an insulator. And the activation energy is extrapolated to 0 as a function of density at some critical density. So this is the density where the strong exponential localization ends. However, we have also established that there is an intermediate range of densities where, in other words, as temperature goes to, it decreases, the conductivity decreases. In this peculiar fashion, there is this temperature correction T to 3/2. And in the zero temperature limit, it extrapolates to finite value. So strictly speaking, this is a metal. However, I want to emphasize that this is a very poor metal. KFL is less than 1, conductivities are very small. But if you look at these zero temperature conductivities, as a function of density, you can extrapolate them to 0, and you get exactly the same value for the critical density. So this density is determined both by the temperature dependence of conductivity on the insulating and on the metallic sides.
What is the ratio of Nc to Nc?
I'll have this on the next slide. Nc, it's very big difference. This is like 4.5, this is 7.5. It's big. So this is, but it depends on the disorder. This is the case in very strongly disordered MOSFETs. However, we have found in those that are much cleaner that these two actually coincide, these two densities. So this intermediate phase vanishes. Okay, so and the glassy behavior is observed for all densities below this Ng, which we call the glass transition density. So it is observed both in this intermediate and insulating phases. Okay, so the first probe, experiment we have done is similar to what other people have done in studies of other electron glasses. The easiest, the most logical, or at least the easiest thing to do is to change the carrier density. So basically, these two show the experimental protocol, and these are the data. And this protocol is simple. Basically, we start at high temperature, fix the gate voltage or the carrier density, and cool down to the measurement temperature. And at some time t equals 0, we change the density to a different value. And then watch what happens with the conductivity. So the final density in this case is, let's see, final. It is just slightly above the critical density for the metal insulated transition. OK, so we watch the conductivity, and we see that after we change the gate voltage, the conductivity drops as it should. And it drops towards this red dashed line, which is the equilibrium value at this new gate voltage. And I'll tell you in a minute why we know it's the equilibrium value. So almost instantaneously goes towards this value, but it doesn't stop. It overshoots it, and in this case, by two orders of magnitude. And only after some longer time, it starts approaching the equilibrium value. And at some later time, we can warm the system up to high temperature. And in our case, 10 Kelvin is sufficiently high to erase all the memory and all the experiments. If we cool back down after, again, to the same temperature, we see that, you know, it's the conductivity is the same sigma zero. So, okay, so, and obviously this is a very slow process. So this is the measurement that was done at one temperature, which is here 3.3 Kelvin. Now, in order to study this in more detail, you repeat this procedure for many different temperatures for this one density first. So here are some of the curves. Yes?
You said that conductivity drops.
Yes.
As it should.
Yes.
But in all experiments that we
Well, here is.
Because you drive the system out of equilibrium fast, and then slowly.
I mean, as it should for this value of the gate voltage if you didn't have any glass effects. So, you know, it's a capacitor. And the conductivity in general depends on the density. I mean, it's not only more carriers, the mobility also goes up. So it should, but it doesn't stop where it should. Okay, so it depends really which way you go. Here we are reducing the density. You can also go the other way. You can increase the density, then it will go up. Yeah. Well, that's different. Let's discuss that later, okay. I mean, because there are some differences. Because I'll never be able to finish, but we can discuss later. Okay, so here are some of the data obtained at different temperatures for this same density, final density. Here we are plotting the conductivity with respect to the equilibrium value for that particular temperature, and the equilibrium value on this logarithmic scale corresponds to zero. So we see at high temperatures, as I've just showed you, the conductivity is not here, it overshoots the equilibrium, keeps going away from it, and then after some time it goes back up and approaches this equilibrium value. As you reduce the temperature, this minimum moves to longer and longer times because relaxations become slower and slower. At some temperatures, this minimum falls out of our experimental time window. But as you keep lowering the temperature, so you can see only this kind of weaker relaxation. So the question first is, you can see at high temperatures it approaches the equilibrium. The question is, how does it approach the equilibrium? Is it an exponential process or not? And you can fit all these curves individually if you like, and yes, you will get an exponential. Or you can you note that all these curves seem parallel to each other and you try to collapse them, which we did. It is shown here. So basically from this collapse, you can determine determine the equilibration time as a function of temperature, which is shown here in the inset. This is 1 over T. And we have like 5 orders of magnitude for this equilibration time for different densities. So the equilibration process is exponential, and we find that it is simply activated. In other words, as temperature goes to zero, the equilibration time diverges. And this signals glass transition temperature, which is equal to zero. And there have been some simulations that have also come up with this result. Okay, so the other, now what we want to look at is the initial relaxation to see what the relaxations look like here. Again, you notice that all these curves look similar. And after you worked at the metal insulator transitions for a while, you want to try to collapse everything. So we also collapse the initial relaxations after, you know, some effort, and you have to do it carefully. And this is what all these curves look like. They are collapsed over 25 orders of magnitude here. And they're described by the so-called Ogielski function that has been used also in spin glasses above the glass transition, which is a product of the power law and the stretched exponential, and they're both characteristic of glassy system. For this density, you see that these exponents are very small. So at short enough times, it seems more like a power law, and then at longer times, this relaxation becomes more is dominated by this stretched exponential. So we also find that this time here in the stretched exponential is also simply activated as a function of temperature. Here is the fit over 7 orders of magnitude. In our case, since we obtained this by collapsing various curves obtained at different temperatures, the exponents alpha and beta do not depend on temperature, which is different from spin glasses. However, they do depend on the density. So these are the values for this density. Now you can repeat all these measurements for different temperatures, for each different density, and so on. And, you know, it's a lot of work. But you can find that this time that's in the stretched exponential function is also an exponential function of the carrier density. In particular, it goes as a square root of the density, which is shown here. And the exponents, we can also determine the dependence of the exponents alpha from the power law and beta that goes into a stretched exponential as a function of density. And we see that alpha goes to zero exactly at that same NG where we determined years ago from noise measurements where we found the onset of glassy dynamics. And it's interesting to see what happens in the zero temperature limit, because this diverges, the stretched exponential function becomes 1. So this actually is reduced to a power law in the zero temperature limit, as you would expect for a phase transition. And the previous slide actually shows you the scaling, which is what one expects in the vicinity of a continuous phase transition. So it's kind of consistent with the results we obtained from the equilibration times that the glass transition temperature is zero. Okay, and here I just want to note that this particular form of the density dependence that we find here strongly suggests that this slow dynamics is dominated by cooling interactions in the 2D electron system itself. Okay, so what have we learned so far? I kind of, you know, I think maybe there is, it may be overwhelming, so I kind of like to summarize several times during the talk. So the data strongly suggests that for all densities below some density Ng, there is a glass transition, strictly speaking, at zero temperature, and there are several pieces of evidence. And again, it's interesting that this is very, very similar to what people find in spin glasses above the spin glass transition temperature, which is, of course, finite there. So at all finite temperatures, our system can equilibrate. However, before it equilibrates on short enough time scales, it is out of equilibrium, so you see all these glassy relaxations. At 4 Kelvin, for example, the equilibration time is 30 seconds. However, at 1 Kelvin, if we have to estimate it from our fits, and we find that at that temperature, the equilibration time exceeds the age of the universe. So for all practical purposes, our system is always out of equilibrium. Okay, so let's see. And I would like to note again that in this protocol, the system equilibrates only after it first goes farther away from equilibrium, and I will come back to this later in the talk. So the second protocol is, again, something that people employed in many systems, in particular in other electron glasses like indium oxide. So what you do here is similar. Again, you cool the system down with some, you know, at some gate voltage. And after we cool the system down, we establish the equilibrium. We do not see any visible relaxations after the cooling process. We establish the equilibrium conductivity for that density, and then we change the gate voltage to a different value. The conductivity changes, and we stay there during some waiting time. And then at time equals zero, we go back to the initial value of the gate voltage. You can see, just like in other, like in indium oxide, the conductivity does not immediately go to its equilibrium value, but very, very slowly it relaxes towards sigma zero. And this particular set of data is shown for the initial or final density, which is in the insulating regime. So this is a protocol is used in order to be able to change the history, because one of the key characteristics of glassy systems is its dependence not only on the time t, but also on the history. So you can change the history by varying this time tw, the waiting time. And we also change the temperature. So if, for example, we look at the same density and few different temperatures. No, I'm sorry. Okay, the same temperature and different waiting times. Let's see what happens. Okay, and this is shown here on the left-hand side. We see that for different waiting times, the conductivity depends very strongly, and the system clearly remembers how much time it has spent for longer waiting times. It was able to go farther away from the initial state. However, when you go to higher temperatures, we start seeing this overshooting. And even at other temperatures, there is more overshooting. So at the lowest temperature, we do see this aging. But this overshooting, you know, appears. These are the data for some other densities. In some cases, you can see it no longer depends on the waiting time, so there is a loss of memory. So we have done these measurements for different temperatures, waiting times, densities, combinations of initial, final, and so on. So this overshooting was really annoying, to say the least. So we decided to at least figure out at first under what conditions we see this overshooting. So we made a little phase diagram of temperatures and waiting times. And these data points separate the two regimes. So for high enough temperatures and long waiting times, this is when we see this overshooting, and there is no, we don't see the waiting time dependence anymore. At low enough temperatures and waiting times, we do not see the overshooting, and we see the aging effect, the dependence on the waiting time. And we also established, actually, that these two regions are separated by this equilibration time. And why the equilibration time? Well, basically, we change the gate voltage to a different value. If you wait there long enough for the system to equilibrate under the new conditions to reach the thermal equilibrium, then when we go back, this is analogous to the previous protocol. So there is no memory. The system has equilibrated. And the opposite is true. If under the new conditions, during the waiting time, you do not wait long enough for the system to equilibrate, then it remembers how much time it spent there. And when you go back, it exhibits the dependence on the waiting time. So it shows aging and memory. Okay, so now we know when it happens, but we still do not know what is the origin of this overshooting. The only thing I would like to note at this point is that this kind of overshooting is observed in a variety of systems. I know that Aviad has several insulating granular metals that all show overshooting under some conditions. It is seen in manganite, some biological systems. I also know there are some theoretical models which probably have nothing, absolutely nothing to do with our system, but that study systems that are very far from equilibrium. And they find that in these cases, the system first goes farther away from equilibrium before it equilibrates. So we speculate that perhaps this kind of overshooting may be some kind of more general feature of systems that are very far from equilibrium. And indeed, in our case, our perturbations are very strong. In some cases, we change the density up to a factor of 7. And in contrast, for example, indium oxide, the typical density changes are 1%. So this may account for some of the differences that have been observed between these two systems. Okay, so we don't understand this, but we can get away from it, and we can sit at a temperature that is low enough, for example, 1 Kelvin, when we know the system will never equilibrate, and we can study the aging. We want to see, you know, how these aging effects depend on the density, how they compare to other systems, and how they depend on the density, in particular, as we go through the metal insulator transition. If you make a small change, then the amplitude of the relaxation is small and the noise is big. So, you know, it gets buried in the noise. So it's very difficult. And also, you know, it's very difficult for us also to study aging below 1 Kelvin exactly for that reason, as you will see in a moment. Oh, yes. So, for example, we are now fixed, you know, we fixed the temperature. And we are looking at one density in the same gate voltage protocol, which is in the insulating regime. And we do these measurements, we repeat the protocol for different waiting times. You can see at this temperature, you know, it's already quite noisy. So just like everybody else, we want to see whether these data can be collapsed, and we, dividing this time with the waiting time, and we find indeed that data do collapse. So in other words, the aging function, this is a case of full or simple aging, where the aging function is a function of just of this ratio T over TW. And you can see that for the times up to the waiting time, they can be fitted pretty well with the power law. So there is a memory of this waiting time imprinted on each of these curves. So we repeat then this for higher and higher densities. So we find that for all the densities that are in the insulating regime, we find this full aging. However, as we increase the density above the critical density for the metal insulator transition, we find increasingly strong departures from full aging. So here is an example where the density is just slightly above the critical density, and you see that we can no longer collapse these curves with this simple scaling. Now, it is known in, people have seen departures from scaling, this simple aging in many other systems, and in some cases, like spin glasses, they have used this mu scaling approach to try to collapse the data, where they basically just raise this waiting time to some exponent mu. So we try to do the same thing because we didn't know what else to do. So in this case, you can see that the data can be collapsed if mu is, you know, 1.3. Now, this approach probably does not have any, you know, physical meaning. However, we have used this just as a tool, as a measure of the deviation departure from full aging. So we plot this exponent mu as a function of density, and as I said, we get full aging or the value of 1 in the insulating regime. As we start increasing the density above the metal insulated transition, we see stronger and stronger departures from full aging, which reaches a maximum at this glass transition. These data points here are really an artifact of the, it's a finite temperature effect. Okay, so why is this important? Well, it's important because, first of all, it shows an abrupt change in the aging properties exactly at the metal insulator transition. And it also shows, for the first time in this case, is that this insulating glassy phase and metallic glassy phase are different. So this does not mean that the fact that this metallic, poor metal, this intermediate funny phase, the fact that there is a departure from full aging does not mean that it is not glassy. It only means that, it's a different kind of glass. And in fact, it is known that, there are various theoretical models, for example, mean field models of glasses. There are some that predict full aging and others do not. So this, these data really, I think, should help kind of narrow down the types of models that can be used to describe these glassy phases. Okay, right. Okay, so this experiment was done for, say, fixed density, and we changed the waiting times and look how the data, how the relaxations depend on the waiting time. There is one more thing that is useful to look at, and that is to fix the waiting time and just see how the relaxations depend on the density for the same waiting time. So the top graph shows the relaxations. Again, we fix the waiting time and just vary the initial density, and we always go to the same density during this waiting time. And you can see that all these curves can be, fitted reasonably well with this kind of power law dependence where we have this prefactor we call relaxation amplitude. If you look carefully, you will see that both these relaxation amplitudes and slopes alpha depend non-monotonically on the density. And this is shown here for these relaxation amplitudes. So if for different fixed waiting times. So you can see that as we start from the glass transition density, the relaxation is small. Then as we reduce the density, it keeps increasing. Now, of course, this density N1 is fixed somewhere here. So you can say, okay, maybe it's increasing because the difference in the two voltages is bigger, even though this is a much bigger effect. But what is most surprising is that this peaks right below the metal insulator transition, and it is suppressed as you enter the insulating regime. So this is, at first seemed very surprising. On the other hand, it is kind of plausible because once you start, the electrons start to get strongly localized, you can imagine it's more difficult for them to move around and relax. Okay, the other thing that I would like to mention here is that this shows that there is another big change in the aging properties that we observe that occurs in the vicinity of the metal insulator transition. So these two phases, definitely the glassy properties of the insulating phase and this intermediate poorly metallic phase are different. And people often ask the question, how do you know that all these glassy properties that you see are really due to the properties, to the dynamics of the 2D electron system itself and not to the maybe changes in the background potential? Because it is, one may imagine a situation that where the background random potential changes with time and the electrons are simply following whatever this background potential is doing. However, the fact that we see a big change in the properties of the glassy phase at the 2D metal insulator transition tells us that even if this background was glassy, this shows that the 2D electron system affects the glassy properties. Affects the background. Therefore, you cannot consider these two systems to be independent of each other. The background cannot be considered to be independent of the 2D system. They have to be, because it's obviously affected by it, so they, even if the background was glassy, they would have to be considered as a coupled, strongly interacting system. However, we can go even further in these devices here, because this is you know, a nice device. We can change the density easily. In fact, during the waiting time, we can remove all the electrons from the 2D layer. So if the background potential was glassy, even without electrons, it would continue to evolve with time. When you introduce the electrons back, then depending on the waiting time, you would see different relaxations. However, on the other hand, if the background was not glassy, then the relaxations should not depend on the waiting time because the electrons were not there and there is nothing to remember. Okay, so in this particular case, when we remove all the electrons from the 2D layer during the waiting time, you see that the relaxations do not depend on the waiting time, which suggests very strongly that the glassiness is due to the, is coming from the 2D layer itself and not from the any changes in the background potential, at least in this experimental time window. I cannot rule out the possibility that maybe if you wait 1 month that the background potential would not change. But on these time scales, it does not. Okay, so finally, yes. Okay, so this is just a quick summary of the experimental results. I have a couple more slides that I want to show after this. So basically, we have found several manifestations of glassiness in this system, which strongly suggests that below some density and G, you know, we have glassy dynamics and glassy freezing in the zero temperature limit. And we observe this glassiness both in the insulating regime and this intermediate phase, non-Fermi liquid phase. There are many similarities to other systems, in particular spin glasses, which is really, I think, exciting because these are completely different systems. And our system, of course, is much simpler. We can change essentially all the relevant parameters relatively easily. And so I think it's a very simple model system for exploring the dynamics of strongly correlated systems because it does not have all these complications that other systems like cuprates have, for example, various changes in magnetic or structural symmetry and so on. Now, what about theory? Well, is there any, you know, theory that can describe any of this? Well, first, I would like to show that this phase diagram that resulted from the work in the group of Vlado Brasavić, also at the Magnet Lab. So this is the phase diagram that was produced by, you know, treating the metal insulator transition as a MOT transition with disorder. And for sufficiently low disorder, of course, they expect that the system will form a Wigner crystal. However, as you increase the disorder, the insulating phase will become glassy, but they also predict the emergence of some intermediate phase, which is a poor metal, but it is glassy. So this is a precursor to the metal insulator transition, which is actually what we observe. Now, in the experiment, we vary the carrier density. So the experimental trajectory of this plot, where we have here a disorder and Fermi energy in units of U, would correspond to these green trajectories here. So if we look at the sample with relatively low disorder, which would be somewhere here, the theory would predict that this intermediate phase would be very small, which goes back to Boris's question earlier on, and even vanish. And this is exactly what we found in our, from our noise measurements earlier on in transport, magnetotransport, in 2D systems that have much less disorder. We found that the glassy glass transition and the metal insulator transition essentially coincide. However, in samples with more disorder, this intermediate phase should be more pronounced, and this is again exactly what we find in these samples. This approach also predicts this kind of a temperature dependence for this intermediate phase, which again is in agreement with what we found in the experiment. So the existence of this phase, the dependence on the disorder, and the temperature dependence are in agreement with this. And I'm told that this was done, you know, using some mean field theory approach, which is known to produce hierarchical dynamics and aging in models of other glasses. And since we have also found hierarchical dynamics from our noise measurements in this system, I think that this may be a promising approach also to describe the glassy dynamics in a 2D electron system in silicon. There have also been various simulations. Some years ago, there were some molecular dynamic simulations where, and here is a picture from their paper. This shows the electron trajectories over a finite period of time. This is for highest densities, and then they reduce the density. And they find basically as at some relatively low densities, many of the electrons are localized in space, and there are some kind of 1D conducting paths. But these pictures change with time. So as a function of time, some of these channels will shut off, the others will open up, and this gives rise actually to the strong noise and non-Gaussianity in agreement with our earlier experiments. So these inhomogeneities are dynamic. And it is interesting that essentially the same picture was obtained using a completely different approach, Monte Carlo simulations. This was done for a 3D Coulomb glass, and they also found heterogeneous dynamics. Basically, there were like two groups of electrons during a given period of time. Some of them will be kind of localized, and the others will conduct. And then as a function of time, you know, they will change places. So I think this is all about, you know, that I would like to say. There are other, I have not listed everything here. Aging was in a 2D Coulomb glass, also found in Monte Carlo simulation some years ago. I mean, I don't know if any of this is really relevant to our system. I just wanted to mention that it is, you know, nice that people, there are more people working on this problem, and I'm optimistic that there will be also maybe some results that are more relevant to our experimental system. Thank you very much.
Well, I have two questions. The first one is, could you bring back the slide where you show the TW experiment, the decay after TW and all that?
Oh, let's see.
That's one of the first slides.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me find it. My screen is kind of messed up here, so it's hard to see. This one?
This? Yes,
the waiting time protocol?
This is fine. No, yes, that one. Thank you. I suppose here you don't have an overshoot, so this is in.
No, because, yeah.
This is
because this is, let's see, low enough temperature, I suppose. What is the temperature here? I can't see it.
I noticed that during TW, the conductance isn't changing.
Okay. It is not. This is a kind of relatively high gate voltage. It is changing, but you cannot see it on this logarithmic scale. And this is log scale. If you blow this up, you know, there is, it's changing, but the amplitude is very small to see on this scale.
Well, usually it would change logarithmically. You don't have a logarithmic decay, but, you know, after you excite the system, and it is still in the glassy state.
You mean during the waiting time?
Yes, during the waiting time.
Okay. This density is just kind of slightly above NG, so it's still at this finite temperature. We see some relaxations here, but we find that, you know, the results generally do not depend on these, the exponents do not depend on that, or the aging function does not depend on it. You know, the amplitude of the relaxation will depend on, you know, which gate voltage you went to during the TW. But so it is relaxing, but not, you know, it's small, you cannot see it. But we have done it also, you know, for other combinations. We have done it for lower densities, going from, you know, low, higher to lower, and all kinds of possible combinations.
Okay, the second question was, you know, we heard from Armitage that in semiconductors with basically similar concentrations, the times are, you see some glassiness, but the times are very much smaller. Orders of magnitude.
Well, this is, I think, what, you know, Christos was trying to emphasize, that it depends really on the kind of experimental probe. His probe, he probes very high frequencies, so in his experimental time window, these are the kinds of times that you can see. Now, our experimental time window covers lower frequencies.
But, what is surprising is that in his case, He sees glassiness only at very short times, and it decays very quickly to equilibrium. And here you see much longer times than he sees.
Well, it depends on the temperature. You know, at 4 Kelvin, we are done in 30 seconds. It's all over. So
densities are similar, no? You have 10 to the 11, roughly, few times 10 to the 11, and here's 10 to the 18 in three dimensions per centimeter cube. So they are similar densities, aren't they?
Yes, they're similar densities. Okay, there is no characteristic time scale here because these are power, you know, relaxation, stretch, exponential. So you have processes occurring with all kinds of times. There is a wide distribution of time. So he is probing frequency window, which is much faster. He's looking at these times, and I'm probing a different regime. But there are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there have been other studies like Don Monroe's experiments on the semiconductor many years ago where he did see using a different technique, was it the capacitance, I think, very long times, you know, comparable to something like this here. So you can say there is also incompatibility there, but I don't think so. Yeah.
So what is the dependence of alpha on the density? Is it always very close to 0.1?
Yeah, I mean, it goes to, you know, it depends on the density.
Written somewhere that it's non-monotonous.
Yes. Let's see. Where is that? Okay. So this is alpha as a function of density.
Yeah, but you hold somewhere that it's non-monotonous.
This was a different protocol. You know, that was a waiting time protocol. In the wait,
for that time.
Oh, that was
the other
question.
Protocol, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The question is if it's...
Okay, I don't have that plot, but it's the same thing. I mean, the same thing happens as for the amplitude. Let me just see. I mean, you can see it from the data. Let's see. Okay, so basically you want to look at the slope. So here is the highest density, and you go to lower densities, 5.6. The slopes become bigger, and then you go to lower densities, again, C2.16 to 4.59, they become smaller and smaller. So they're both non-monotonic, it's just that I don't have that plot. I'm not saying we understand all the details, but actually I'm not saying we understand anything. I'm just showing the data and they show all the glassy features. Yeah.
You showed that at NC, the transition from the bad metal into insulator. But the insulator probably is also bad. At any temperature, you excite electrons into the metal. So my question is, can you show us data how the DC conductivity in this insulator looks as a function of temperature?
Yes. Let me just see. I have some extra plots here. Okay. Well, there are several ones. Okay, this was the first one. We have better ones these days, and I'll show you another one, the lowest one here. So this is basically what we find in this, you know, metallic phase. In the insulator, it is this. It's simply, okay, in these high mobility samples, in these highly disordered samples, in this range of densities close to the metal insulator transition, we find simple activation. So we are not able to go very deep just because the resistance becomes too large. In samples with less disorder, we have been able, the best fit was T2 minus 1/2, Efroshkolsky fit. But in these with more disorder, at least in this range close to the metal insulator transition, it's simply activated. Now, there have been studies, you know, decades ago where people looked at these similar samples with auto disorder, they found T2 1/3. Was that a question? Okay.
Yes. Okay. I mean, may I ask? Oh, okay. First of all, you showed this interesting dependence on the concentration that reminds a little bit Polaron effect. You have this e to the square root of n. Could it be due to things like electronic Polaron effect? It
I don't know. You tell me.
Because you have like dressing of the, yeah. Like, I don't know, something tunneling by the scattering of colors. In 2D it might have. Another question is, do you have, you have electronic doping, right, in your system?
It's a p-type. You mean, are you talking about bulk silicon?
Yeah.
It's a p-type.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, close to the inversion layer, all these states are, you know, filled because there is a depletion layer. So first you have to populate them.
That's why one possibility, just maybe suggestion, not even question, could be that due to scattering of some fluctuators of something like heaven, long relaxation times, you get reduction of energy and related reduction to the density of state, which does not work when you have good metal because density of state is basically constant in 2D. But when you go to lower energy, you have some energy dependence, and then you might see the related effect. That,
maybe, but you have to be able to explain all these data. For example, why are these two glassy phases different? Why these two phases have different glassy properties? They're different types of glass. So,
which two phases?
The insulator and this intermediate bad metal.
Of course, it is different because there is different reason. I mean, if you consider insulator, there is like localization and much stronger interaction effect. While in your case, it looks like that. It can be simply energy reduction that brings you. What is the, for instance, the temperature dependence of your change in conducting? Did you probe that?
What change in conductance?
Delta
this
sigma,
is the change.
Delta sigma, like you have reduction of your conductance when you lower temperature.
Yeah, so this is for the insulating regime and this is for this intermediate phase.
Yes, so for insulating regime it looks like...
Yeah, in this case it's simply activated.
Okay, so it's much stronger in insulating case.
Yes, it's insulating, yeah.
Some difference. So,
yeah.
Okay. Thank you, so
it
might be interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, if somebody, somebody can come up with...
Yeah, but if you, it might be interesting to try the whole wave system, and then this simple effect of scattering by some dynamic defect might bring you down in energy and leads to opposite effect. It might be interesting.
Okay, yeah, maybe we can discuss that later.
Okay, thank you.
I have a trivial question, just on your first protocol. You had this spike in temperature. You changed the gate voltage.
Maybe.
When I was looking at temperature, somehow there's
maybe
a
maybe eventually, let me see.
And
the
I
first,
just couldn't understand why you, what
waiting,
that was doing there.
Which protocol? The first one?
First one, where you just have a step function in the gate voltage.
I see. This
and
is
then
a,
you, and then in temperature, there's this like little
you mean here
out.
At the end? Or
yeah, no.
This?
6,000, yeah, at 5,000. Yeah.
Oh,
that,
this.
What's that?
Oh, yeah. Well, because we, you know, we wanted to warm up and then cool down to see what the equilibrium would be for this
oh, I
value.
See. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So this is how we determine, yes, it does go to the same value that it's approaching. And as I said, after we cool down, we do not see any visible relaxation, so this is also different from other experiments. But, you know, we speculated because this change in temperature is very, very small perturbation compared to the, say, Fermi energy or the system, so.
I also have a simple question.
I like simple questions.
Yeah, good. You're changing gate voltage, but discuss data in terms of changing in concentration. Is it kind of obvious or there is some evidence that, I mean, concentration kind of immediately follows the gate voltage? It may be, I mean...
Well, it's a capacitor and, you know, the RC time constant for the capacitor is much smaller, you know, in the worst possible case, it's 1 microsecond.
You know, but capacitor accumulates, I guess, on the gate, charge on the gate. And
on the gate or in the 2D layer?
But these are two different things, no?
Well, the gate is a metallic electrode.
Yes.
For example, it could be aluminum.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other one is the, 2D layer.
So how long does it take to, I mean, for charge to accumulate in this inversion layer?
Well, okay, I mean, this initial drop also, it takes It takes, you know, it's instantaneous, less than a microsecond.
Dropping potential.
Excuse me?
It's dropping potential. It's not dropping concentration of electrons in the gas, no?
Well, you know, all the studies over the last several decades show that, you know, it happens much faster than our resolution, our shortest time, which is 1 second. So, and here, I mean, you can see it also drops very quickly towards where it's supposed to be. The only problem is that it doesn't stop there. Of course, if you do, yeah, if you do it at high temperatures, it's different.
Two questions. One is, why did you choose 20 times 10 to the 11 instead of, you know, 8 times 10
to the 11? Have you seen the movie Spinal Tap?
No.
No? Okay, they have this 11 on their, you know, scale. They say 11 is better than 10. So we have this gate voltage source, which goes to up to 11. And it was kind of convenient to change to 11 volts. Okay. So it's very mundane. However, this is why we used it a lot. But we have done this for many different, you know, combinations. Sure. I mean, we've done all kinds of combinations, initial, final, everything. This is why it took years to do this.
The other question was, how much does the conductivity change between your two transitions, NC and NG? Because one of the things I noticed in your curves was that your temperature dependence is neither like three-dimensional niobium silicon nor like three-dimensional silicon phosphorus. It seems to have the third possible set
let's
of
see. Where is the plot? I'm trying to find it. Yeah. There's supposed to be one more. Oh, like this one. So this is the time average conductivity, or what people normally call conductivity as a function of temperature for different densities. This is the glass transition. Critical density is here, so you know it's 1 Kelvin. So changes a lot. Is that what you were asking about?
Well below the quantum of conductance in your glass, in your conducting glass
phase. Yes, yes. I mean, you can see this is E squared over H, so the separatrix is here. It's of the order of, you know, E squared over H, similar to all the other systems. So this is below.
And you believe that that actually has finite conductance at zero temperature?
Well, according to the fields. Okay, let me show you some nicer, even better fields.
The thing that worries me is that if you look at your curves, the one that you just showed, that one, right?
Let me show you another one. Well, you know, I want to show these extra slides that I had just in case. So this was done actually in high mobility silicon MOSFET samples with much less disorder than a lot of people like Miriam and others have studied in great detail. And this was done in the magnetic field. So in the magnetic field, you can see there is a whole range of densities where we see exactly the same kind of temperature dependence. And we are really surprised to find it here because we thought, okay, you know, highly disordered samples are different. But it was really amazing to find it here. And these are, okay, you know, we don't know what's happening here, but if you extrapolate, the zero temperature conductivity is actually, you know, obey this very nice power law dependence as a function of the distance from the critical density, and we get the same exponent for different fields.
Those look very much like niobium silicon.
It's very, yeah. So basically, this is what happens in samples with little disorder. In zero field, the glass transition and metal insulator transition almost coincide. When you put the field on, then this intermediate phase becomes bigger. And, you know, here you becomes bigger and things don't change here. And other people have established that the 2D system is already fully spin polarized beyond these fields here. So it's not surprising it doesn't change. And you can say, okay, you put a field on, you spin polarize and reduce the screening. There is more effective disorder. And this is why you have this wider intermediate phase. But I think it is striking that, you know, I think it's pretty because we have this nice power law.
You showed the other one.
Yeah.
Just one.
Sure.
That one.
Yeah.
Where you see that the the closer you get to the transition, the lower the slope of the curve.
Yeah, so it's different because in that fuzzing, the other one, the slopes are parallel. Here, they're different, and I don't understand.
So there was always that difference between non-compensated silicon phosphorus and compensated niobium silicon. In niobium silicon, it just marches down parallel like the ones you showed in the previous curve. But in phosphorus doped silicon, it gets steeper as you get to the metal insulator transition. Mm-hmm. And here you're claiming it gets shallower as it gets to the metal insulator transition, which is a little peculiar.
Well, you know, this is what the data do. Of course, we tried first to fit to log T or all the standard forms, and nothing fit, and this was the best thing. So that's what the data show. We have the same result in another sample. I think it looks maybe slightly better. But it was surprising that we get the same peculiar dependence in these other samples. But yeah, this was kind of puzzling to me. Why are these slopes parallel here and not there? And so.
Any more questions? Let's thank the speaker again.